Call Jenny Dean.
Call Jenny Dean.
Are you mad? She won't lie. She knows her sister will be executed if she doesn't.
She knew that before.
On her own territory, Butler. This is a courtroom.
She won't. Trust me. I've known her since we were bairns.
Well, we're about to find out.
Welcome, listeners, to the heart of Midlothian. A highly dramatic tale based on almost true events, written originally in three-volume novel form by myself, Sir Walter Scott, and now adapted for the wireless with brutal economy by someone called Mike Harris.
Miss Dean, you are the older sister of the accused.
I am, sir.
You are 20 years old.
Yes, sir.
And you understand why Effie Dean, your 17-year-old sister, is accused of murdering her baby?
Yes.
And you also understand that only one piece of evidence can now save your sister?
I think so, sir.
Well, let's be certain. If your sister told anyone that she was pregnant before the baby disappeared, this law assumes that she didn't murder her child.
I understand that, sir.
But if she told no one, the law assumes she has murdered the bairn herself or conspired in its murder. Do you understand that?
I do, sir.
Now, Jenny Dean, did your sister Effie tell you that she was pregnant?
Jenny, save me!
The defendant will remain silent. Proceed.
Jenny, did your sister tell you she was pregnant?
For the love of God, Jenny!
One more interruption and he will be removed from the court. Jenny Dean, answer the question or be in contempt.
Yes or no, Jenny?
No.
Speak up!
No, my lord, she did not.
You've killed me, Jenny! You've killed your own sister when I'm wearing your mouth! Save me!
Forgive me, dear listener, for not pointing out that this is the year of our Lord 1734. We are in Edinburgh and are now following our heroine, Jenny Dean, and her childhood sweetheart, Reuben Butler, out of the courthouse into the middle of an angry mob.
They're here to judge me, Reuben. Oh, dear Lord.
Stay there. Let's see what they're about.
There's no justice in a world where our lairds and maesters can change the laws at will.
Excuse me.
How can they pardon a man who ordered his soldiers to shoot on the people?
Let me pass, please.
A man who took a musket out of the hands of one of his own men and shot a pregnant woman in cold blood.
Now, the voice we just heard belongs to a fierce old hag of forbidding aspect. But she stands on a box next to a much younger, very pretty girl, admittedly dressed most fantastically, but seemingly not as angry. So Reuben decides to question her.
Excuse me, miss.
Bloody Captain Porteous deserves death!
That's my ma.
No, pardon!
Excellent. Now, I wonder...
She's Meg and I'm Madge.
Good day, Madge. I was wanting to ask you...
If you're looking for business, you've come to the right shop, mister.
No, good God, no. I mean, thank you, but I'm nearly in. I want to know what all these good people are so angry about.
The King's pardoned a murderer of some sort.
But not Effie Dean.
Did she order the redcoats to shoot on the people?
No.
Then it's not her. I'm no very expensive, you know.
Thank you, but I have a pressing appointment. Jenny, it's all right, follow me.
And Mama says I can't charge so much as the other lassies on account of being cracked in the head.
When Butler gets Jenny home, she breaks down and runs sobbing to bed. But her strict Presbyterian father pays no heed, for he is rereading his Old Testament, Judges to be precise, by whose lights he has already condemned her sinful sister to the flames of hell. So Butler returns wearily to the Tolbooth prison, known locally, and with no little irony, as the heart of Midlothian, where the mob is now bigger uglier and angrier. So he gains access through a side door and makes his way to the dingy cell where Jenny's sister Effie sits waiting for a sadly inevitable verdict.
Why couldn't she tell just one wee lie for me, Reuben?
Because she is good and true and godly.
What's the use of godly if it doesn't have human feelings?
She just ran sobbing into her bedroom, Effie.
So there's still hope? She's loved you since you were bairns, Reuben. Can you not try to change her mind?
Do you think I haven't? Her lawyers tried. The prosecutors tried. Nobody likes this law, but she will not, she cannot break the word of God.
Has the devil coming to drag me down to hell?
It's more likely the mob. My God, they're blowing off the gates.
They're coming for me. They think I killed my bairn.
Calm down. They want Captain Porteous.
Oh, Lord, forgive me, for I've sinned. Forgive me, please, forgive me.
Forget about them and listen to me, Effie Dean. You have one chance left to save your life.
What chance?
Give them the feather.
What do you mean?
Well, he claims to be a gentleman as well as a smuggler, yes?
Aye, very well spoken English and everything.
Aye, well, governments hate smugglers for they rob them of revenues, but smugglers who disgrace their class, they're hated even more. Tell me his name, Effie.
No.
Tell me where he is. I'll tell the magistrate and he might just petition the king to have you transported rather than hung.
No.
For heaven's sake, why not?
My own sister wouldn't lie to save my worthless life. Why should I betray my own true love to save it?
Are you in there, Effie?
Oh, my dear Lord, it's him. My sweet, I'm in here.
Who is it?
And the answer to that is, well, the strangest figure Reuben Butler has ever seen. Half man, half woman. Tall, muscular, bearded, bewigged, and dressed in the most fantastical, party-coloured female garments. Garments Reuben felt he had seen before, but could not place.
Effie, come with me quickly. There's a carriage waiting outside prison and... Who the hell are you, sir?
The Reverend Reuben Butler. And you, sir? Or should I say madam?
And what are you doing alone with Effie?
He's Jenny's betrothed.
Is he? Well... That's lucky for him, for I was about to slit his gizzard for insulting you with his pasty-faced presence. Now come on, my lovely. The castle militia will be here soon enough.
No, George.
Oh, for God's sake, don't use my name.
I'm sorry, but I'm not coming.
We've found Porteous, man.
Oh, 1 minute. Oh, God.
One minute.
What are you talking about?
I'm worthless, so I may as well die.
Madge, come on, will you?
Get to your feet. Come on.
Woody, go. Get off me. My father condemns me. My parents gone. My sister condemns me. I have neither honour nor purpose.
I've no time for this.
I gave up my baby to a hag that killed
me. Leave her be, Madge. Or George, or whatever your name is.
If you're going to come and stop him soon, I'll kick him to death. Before he can be hung decent.
For the last time, Effie, come on.
No, no.
For the love of Christ, leave her be.
So be it. I've never forced any woman and I'm not starting now, but I will take you.
What for?
You're a man of the cloth.
Yes?
I've got work for you.
And with that, he lets go of the girl he ruined and drags Butler out of the cell with a dirk at his throat. And from thence, down many stone steps, leading ultimately to the inner courtyard of the prison, during which seemingly interminable journey, the hapless Butler occupies himself interrogating his strangely begowned and bearded captor.
An honourable man with a giddy's life to save her.
I'd have done that already if I thought it would work, but there's a more certain way left.
What way?
After you've done this wee job for me.
Is Effie's baby dead?
What?
Effie's baby. The cause of all this.
How would I know?
Effie says you gave it away.
I did, but the hag I gave it to sold it on.
Who to?
An equally foul hag who's disappeared with it. Or the first hag pocketed my money and killed it. Now stop struggling and come through here. I won't kill you if you do as I say.
And when Butler finally arrives at the inner courtyard at the heart of the heart of Midlothian, he finds himself called upon to play a part in a scene apparently dramatised by his captor from Dante's Inferno, in which a filthy drunken mob are about to tear apart, limb from limb, the bloody semblance of a human being.
What do you want me to do?
I want you to help me stop them murdering Captain Porteous.
But you encouraged them to do it!
But I want it done with more ceremony! As befits a gentleman murderer.
Why should they listen to me?
Because you're a priest and they're used to listening to your jabbering cant. So, here we go again.
Leave him be! And listen to the man of God here, will ye? Or ye'll taste the wrath of the Almighty, as well as match Wildfire's claymore!
And lo, as the gentleman in lady's clothes predicted, the mob goes quiet.
Tell him to back off while I put the noose around his neck.
I won't do that.
You will if you want this dirk to stay outside your guts.
And so Butler does as he is bid.
Please! Dear God! Save me!
And thus, despite the king's pardon, Captain Porteous of the Royal Edinburgh Militia is hung by the people for firing on the people when they had gathered together simply to demand cheaper bread.
Dear God! Oh, Lord!
Stop mewling. It's justice.
You didn't do this for justice.
No?
No, you did it so you could rescue Effie from justice.
From injustice. But what's the difference? Justice, injustice, truth and lies are all fiction. Meaning shifts like the wind, and in the end we're all dead. So stop your canting and take this message to Jenny Dean. Here.
After which, the fantastical figure leaps upon a stolen horse and disappears into the night, leaving a bewildered butler to make his way back once more to Jenny Dean's cottage, where, as he is about to enter, he hears a stranger's voice.
And so, Jenny, you will marry me, yes?
At which our heartbroken priest staggers back in horror and considers leaving Scotland forever in order to devote himself to bringing Presbyterianism to the heathen Hottentot.
I'm afraid I can't do that, sir.
What? But I... Why ever not?
For one, because you're the laird and I'm just a farm girl.
If I cared a pish or a pibble for that, would I come visiting you in your father's dirty wee hovel day in, day out all these years? With all your frowsy neighbours laughing at me behind their hands?
You said you were visiting my dad, sir. So if you were visiting me, you should have said, and I could have put you out of your misery earlier, because of the next reason.
Which is?
I have been promised to another since we were both weans.
You've been what? To who?
At which point, Reuben Butler, having bethought himself of the Hottentot option, storms into the room.
Who is this man kneeling in front of you, my love?
It's the Laird Dumbydykes, Reuben. You've met him before, I think. A long time ago. Please, get up, my lord. This is Reuben Butler.
Sir?
Was your mother one of my father's maidservants?
She was.
God's porridge, Jenny. He called you love. Him. That. Is he the one you prefer to me? With his threadbare coat and his paltry wig and his nose? Well, I know when I'm no wanted, so I shall take my leave. Forthwith.
Aye, do that.
I will.
Off you go, then.
I'm on my way. Don't worry. Forever.
Mind the step, my lord.
Good day to you, madam.
Is that a letter from Effie?
Was he proposing?
Give it to me, Reuben, for pity's sake. Thank you.
He's a rich man.
Aye. But I can't marry anyone now. This isn't Effie's hand.
But you can't marry anyone.
It says I'm to meet whoever this is at Salisbury Crags.
You're saying you can't marry me, Jenny?
Who gave you this, Reuben?
Why can't you marry me?
For the same reason I couldn't marry that noddlehead Dumbydykes. Except in your case, it pains me more than I can say. Now, are you going to tell me who sent me this or not?
A man who just tried to rescue Effie from prison dressed in women's clothes.
What?
Exactly.
But who?
The man who got her with child, a ridiculous English aristocrat or some such, playing at being a smuggler. Why can't you marry me now, Jenny?
Because I carry Effie's shame with me. And you're a preacher, and you'd never get a living of any kind with me as your wife. So I think you'd better go.
But Jenny...
Just go, will you?
You intend meeting this man?
If it's to help Effie...
I'll come with you.
No, you won't.
Why not?
He says I'm to meet him alone.
But he's a proven seducer. I'm a man of low appetites.
And I'm the woman who wouldn't save her sister from hanging when she could have. So I don't think I've got much reputation to lose, have I? Now, leave me alone, Reuben Butler. Or I might start to hate you instead of loving you more than I can say.
And so Reuben Butler leaves his beloved and wends his weary way home to his miserable lodgings in a malodorous alley off Princes Street, cursing his fate and wishing that Effie Dean had never set eyes on the dangerous man her sister Jenny was to meet that night in one of the wildest, loneliest places the country round Edinburgh can offer. Until...
Your name, sir?
Who is asking, sir?
Take hold of him.
What are you doing? Take your hands off me. I am a minister in the Court of Scotland.
And I am the law.
And before he knows it, poor Reuben is back in the heart of Midlothian. But this time, being interrogated by the very judge who presided over Effie's trial.
You're sure this so-called Madge Wildfire was a man in disguise?
Yes.
And that he is the seducer of Effie Dean?
He said it himself, and as I keep telling you, he is to meet Jenny Dean tonight in, oh my God, in an hour's time, so you should be going there to save her instead of
Leave
talking
to... Take your filthy hand off me and I'll come off your penny car!
Shush your racket, you little
hand! Don't come in
there! Are these the women, jailer?
Aye, sir.
Then bring them in.
Again! Come on.
And so we meet the real Madge Wildfire and her mother, Meg Murdochson, whom you last heard calling for Captain Porteous to be hung.
What right is that piece of shite to drag me out of my bed like I was a common criminal when the rich folks steal the food out of the mouths of the poor to pay for their mansions?
Oh, be quiet! Quiet or I'll have you taken out and whipped. And you just stop that caterwauling. Good. Now, Mr. Butler, did you not hear me?
Do you know, Ken, she's soft in the heat. Shush, Madge.
Butler, is this the person who caused a riot and then caused Captain Porteous to be hung?
No, but she seems to be wearing the exact same clothes.
He were wearing my clothes?
Be quiet! One word more and I have you flogged, soft in the head or not. Now, how did he get your clothes? Well, lost your tongue now, have you?
You just said you'd flog her if she said another word.
Not if I ask her a direct question.
Ah, well, you didn't make that clear, did you? And my Madge has got a very literal way of thinking on account of what was done to her by the very same man who took her clothes yesterday.
But why did he take her clothes?
For a disguise.
He could have chosen a less conspicuous one.
Aye, well, he likes to startle and dismay.
You know him?
I might.
Was it you he gave Effie's baby to?
I couldn't say.
Is it dead or alive?
I couldn't say.
You have to. A girl's life depends on it.
I'll ask the questions if you don't mind, Mr. Butler. Well, is it?
I couldn't say.
Why?
I couldn't say.
What is the real name of its father?
Effie called him George.
What's his second name?
I couldn't say.
Why are you protecting him?
I have my reasons.
Do you think a spelling change would help you remember them?
I couldn't say.
Oh, stop saying that. You exasperating hag.
We can take the man himself if we go to the place where he's meeting Jenny.
That's easier said than done. Salisbury Crags is a wilderness and it's getting dark.
Oh, well, my Madge knows how to get there easily.
Are you still here? Will you fling these two in his cells, will you?
With pleasure, sir.
And give them a good flogging first.
I'm trying to tell you that Madge knows a quick way to Salisbury Crags.
Hey, what's that?
She takes gentlemen there. Knows it better than she knows her own self. She'll lead you straight to the spot.
We'll take the simpleton, but not the hag.
I'm not going nowhere without my mom.
We're wasting time, sir.
Oh, for heaven's sake. All right, both of them. But keep them close to you and keep them tied.
And so the Kirk, represented by Butler, and the law, personified by our good magistrate, are led through a wilderness by a mad girl and a madam to the barren place where Jenny Dean waits, all alone on a moonless night, to meet a Byronic anti-hero, some 100 years before any of us had heard of such a creature.
Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Who's there? Hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven.
Oh, hell.
Who's there? And what do you want with me?
Are you Jenny Dean?
I am. And who are you?
Just such another wretch as yourself. Predestined like the rest to evil and despair if you believe your miserable man, John Knox.
Show me your face.
I prefer the dark.
What do you want?
To save your sister's life.
So do I.
Then you have a strange way of showing it.
I will do anything the Lord permits.
Well, that leaves an awful lot of elbow room considering the range of woeful things your man permits down here on a daily basis.
You're speaking to the devil, not the Lord.
Well, I find it hard to tell the difference sometimes. But enough Manichaeanism. I tried to rescue your sister last night, but she wouldn't be saved. So the ball bounces back to you, Jenny Dean.
How?
Go to the magistrate and tell him you misremembered.
What?
Because Effie did tell you she was pregnant.
I can't.
Yes, you can.
I can't see anything that's wrong in the eyes of the Lord.
Did you hear that, Jenny?
What was it?
It's what will blow a hole through your sanctimonious forehead if you refuse to tell a little white lie to save your sister's life.
If I couldn't do that to save my sister's life, I'll need do it to save my own.
I'll give you a minute to consider that. And I'll even count it down for you. 59, 58, 57, 56, 55.
Good even, good fair moon, good evening to thee. I prithee, dear moon, now show to me.
Where the hell's she taking us?
To the place she said she would.
Have you got well hold of Meg the Hag, dear Lashford?
I cannot see a hand in front of me here.
Hey, who you calling a hag, you scrawny knock-kneed?
Oh, fist tight round her scrawny neck, my lord.
What about a mooncalf?
She will nae run off, we'll have her more. She stopped.
Listen.
What is it?
Can you no hear? Now, Madge, sing loud and clear.
It's the bonny bird.
Will you shut her up, Taylor?
Where's the sleeve of blue?
He's let go of me, Madge. Run for it. Run for your life. And I'll meet you in the usual place.
Come here. Stop.
And so farewell for now, Meg Murdochson, and farewell to Madge Wildfire, as you escape the clutches of both Kirk and Law, if only so that you may, later in our tale, return to introduce that element of jeopardy, without which no historical drama can ever please. Meanwhile, Jenny Dean's mysterious captor is running out of numbers to count.
3, 2, 1.
God forgive you.
Hell and damnation, can nothing make you lie?
What's going on?
The only thing that'll save your sister now is the king's pardon. And there's only one way I know of getting that.
Jailer!
Oh, I tripped and fell down a wee cliff, sir. Oh.
So goodbye, Jenny Dean. I have to go before those idiots collect themselves.
What about Effie?
If you won't save her, sad to say, I'm her only hope.
Now it is our handsome villain's turn to escape, while the agents of morality and law fumble to find each other in the dark, and Jenny goes home alone, determined that the fate of her sister cannot be left in the hands of her wicked seducer, however besotted he may be.
Jenny, he suggested that if all else failed, he would offer himself up in exchange for Effie's life.
And you trust that? Pass me my Bible.
But he has something to offer them. You have nothing.
I have my faith, Reuben. Are you saying that's nothing?
No. But why do you think the king will pardon Effie just because you ask him for it?
Because he's the king, and kings are just...
In fairy stories, Jenny. Jenny, when the real king finds out it was Effie's lover who caused a riot to get her out of prison and then hung one of the king's officers...
Well, there's nothing else to be done, so it must be tried.
The date for Effie's execution has been set, Jenny.
I know.
And you've not got time to get to London and back before she's hung.
Will you pass my bonnet, please?
And you won't get anywhere near him without influence.
And what's that when it's wearing a kilt?
Some powerful lord to approach the king on your behalf.
I don't even know anybody powerful.
I do. Or rather, my father did. A long time ago. So, pass me some paper.
Here.
Right. His name's Argyle. My father saved his life at the Battle of Sheriff Muir. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but it's all there is. So, go to his mansion in Westminster, try to get past his servants, mention the name of Butler, and give him this. But if you'll let me come with you, there's a better chance.
Without a chaperone? They ken my sister's a whore. Do you want to turn me into one too?
But I'm a clergyman.
That only makes it worse.
Then let me give you some money so you can get a coach.
You haven't got any money.
You can have what I have. Here.
Wouldn't it get me as far as Dundee?
Well, it'll buy you some boots.
True enough. And I can use them for the rocky roads.
What, you intend walking barefoot everywhere else?
Why not? What's good enough for Scotland's good enough for them down there. But I'm thinking of borrowing a wee bit more to pay for the accommodation in London, which they say is fierce expensive.
Who from, Jenny? Jenny! Oh, this is mad. Jenny!
And so our heroine takes herself to the mansion of the Laird Dumbydykes, who is, by general repute, the most tight-fisted, grudge-bearing curmudgeon in the whole of Scotland.
And what are you going to London for, Jenny?
To beg the King to pardon my sister Effie.
Well, that's a fool's errand, to be sure. But what business is it of mine? Now you've made it clear you'll no accept my hand in marriage.
I was hoping to borrow from you.
Borrow?
Money.
Money?
For the journey, my lord.
Wait there.
At which Jenny's heart leaps with hope as the Laird Dumbydykes lugs a wooden chest over to Jenny in a cloud of ancient dust and unlocks.
This, Jenny, is my bank. And this is all yours if you want. Not only for your tomfool journey of mercy, but for life. If you'll only change your mind about the wee matter of marriage we discussed yesterday. Huh? So, what do you say? Where are you going? Jenny!
If I must walk and beg my way to London, I'd better be making tracks. Goodbye to you, sir.
Jenny, indeed. Wait, will you, for the love of God. Jenny.
Have you come to mock my tomfool journey some more, my lord?
They say you shouldn't take a woman at her first word.
Aye, but you'll take me at mine, for I hae but one word to bestow upon anybody, and that's a true one.
Oh, then you shouldn't take a man at his first word.
What do you mean by that, sir?
There's 10 gold guineas in this. Take it.
Only if you give it freely, knowing I will pay it back in kind and not in my person.
Oh, gang where you like. Marry who you like. Marry all the butlers in the country if you want to. Just take it and be gone out my head so I can ken some peace again.
Thank you, my lord, from the bottom of my heart. And the peace of the world be with you if we should ever meet again.
Take care, Jenny Dean. For the world's a terrible lonely place where you stray far from home.
And so Jenny Dean sets off on her hopeless quest, bonneted and barefoot, with only a Bible and a change of plaid tied up in a linen bag. She makes 30 miles a day, in a time when the wretched, lawless roads make journeys by foot almost as quick and no more dangerous than coach or post horse.
Have you not got any shoes to wear, bonny lass?
And the further south she travelled,
what you got in your head, lass? Is that an atter of pudding?
The more aware she became of how little she had travelled.
What language you have speaking, woman? For I can't tell a word you're saying. Is it English at all?
And so to make herself less conspicuous, she hides the bonnet in her bag, and when rain and cold drives her to sleep in wayside inns, she locks herself away and writes letters to her reluctantly spurned sweetheart.
Dear Reuben, I'm halfway now to London and have seen many strange things and been subject as much to the hostility as to the comfort of strangers. And I could wish that everything stood between us as it did before my silly wee sister committed her great sin. But it isnae, and I canna make it so, and there's an end. And I would be in as good a frame of mind as possible in the circumstances if I didn't keep hearing at every wayside inn of two women asking after me, one old and one young. And I had no idea who they could be.
Jenny Dean?
Yes?
Do you not recognise me?
No, I didn't.
Well, you saw me once, and I saw you. outside the heart of Midlothian.
I can't stop. I've got urgent business in London.
Then why don't you get up behind me and I'll take you a bit of the way?
And at that, Jenny hesitated. Time was passing. The date of Effie's execution was all too soon. And so, in desperation, she got up, thinking the risk worth the time to be gained. But soon Madge turned off the road.
Where are you going?
Oh, it's a wee shortcut.
Which led deep into a forest to a remote clearing hung with slaughtered animals, where an old woman sat skinning rabbits in front of a lurid red campfire.
Mummy, is this the one that took my man away from me? Stay still or I'll slit your throat.
No, Madge, it's her sister.
Well, she's no so pretty as her, or me. So I'm thinking we're not going to be getting much siller off the gents for her scrawny wee body.
Nah, well, that's not what I had in mind. Get her down and tie her to your wrist with a piece of rope.
If you say so, Mummy. And down you come, you wee fruzy. Now, hold out your hands.
What do you want with me?
Just let me get you tied or we'll both be in trouble with Ma.
And dinna whisper to her, you barking mad slut, do you hear?
How long have we to keep her, Mummy?
Until her hooria sister's hung.
And after that, you can marry me?
If that's what you like to think. Or maybe it's so I can have the pleasure of making sure he doesna marry the hoorie Spurngeefer.
But when we let this one go...
Let her go? Let her go straight to the nearest magistrate and make sure I'll be hanging by my neck for kidnapping. Take her to the barn and stay with her.
Can I sing her to sleep, Mummy?
Do what the hell you want short of killing her. For I will be wanting the pleasure of that myself in due course.
Now, Jenny Dean, did you ever see such a dainty chamber? With the moon shining through the holes in the roof, and the fresh straw. Which you'd better lie down on now and gang to sleep, or Mammy will be in with her skin and knife and tack off your face.
Oh, there.
Isn't he that nice? Now get to sleep. Oh, I like to sleep, Jenny. For then I dream that I'm dancing with the Lady of the Moon and my poor wee bairn that lives there with her.
What wee bairn, Madge?
The one that did and went to hell for it were not baptised.
And while Madge Wildfire innocently snores, Jenny Dean makes her wrists bloody and raw trying to break the bonds, but to no avail. And then dawn comes. Finds the old woman drunk and insensible, and Madge Wildfire waking like a newborn babe.
Oh, I'm awfully stiff for sleeping on this floor, Jenny Dean. I could do a stretch in my legs.
Do you want to go for a walk?
Aye. Oh, but Mama wouldn't let me leave you.
Your Ma's still snoring, and will be for most of the morning by the sound of her.
And how can I go for a walk with you tied to my wrist?
I could go with you.
Aye. Well, I might be mad, but I'm nae stupid.
How can I escape when I'm tied with a rope and you're so much bigger and stronger than me?
I'm bonnier. Come on then.
And so off the unlikely couple go, down sun-speckled woodland paths, with Madge skipping and dancing and picking wild flowers to put in her hair.
The land I am blithest to own, the Lady of Beaver in diamonds may shine, but is not a heart so lightsome as mine.
And Jenny all the while looking for a chance to escape, until they come to a break in the trees, through which, across some fields, they see a village with a most unusual steeple, whereupon Madge falls to her knees, whimpering.
Oh, no! Oh, no!
What's wrong? Madge, what
What is it?
That's the place.
What place?
Where I met him.
Who? Oh,
the man who said he loved me. And Mammy said I was to do whatever he wanted so we could both be rich off him. So I did. But the baby that were born didn't he breathe once. And it is buried in the churchyard there, all lonely and cold.
And now Jenny hears Mother Blood approaching.
Madge! Madge, you burnt brain slot! Where are you?
Which Madge, in the depths of her sorrow, does not hear. Nor does she see Jenny slip the dirk out of her belt, cut the rope that binds them together, and make to run, until pity overwhelms her, and she decides she cannot leave poor, mad, damaged Madge with her wicked mother.
Take me to it, Madge.
Take you to what?
To the grave of your poor wee bairn. Have you ever seen it?
Never. He gave my mammy some siller to tack me out the wa before it were buried.
Then now's your chance.
Madge, you silly whore, where are ye?
Now, Madge. Come on, show me.
And so the mad girl leaps to her feet, dragging Jenny over the field so fast she can barely keep from stumbling until they reach the church with the unusual steeple, and then pell-mell up its drive, at which point the church doors open and the congregation surge out, led by a strikingly handsome dark-haired gentleman on crutches who, for some reason, causes Madge to stop in her tracks and scream.
What the hell? Madge? Oh, for God's sake.
Don't be alarmed, good people. This poor mad girl was often before my father at the bench. Go home. Don't let her spoil your Sunday. Sam, bring her round the back.
The lame man's servant drags Madge round to the graveyard, followed by Jenny, who sees Meg Murdochson approaching across the field and therefore prefers to keep close to this crippled man, whose voice makes her shiver, although she doesn't know why, yet.
What are you back down here for, Madge? Didn't I pay your mother enough? Oh, for God's sake, stop whimpering.
She came to see the grave of her child.
And who are you? Good Lord. Jenny Dean.
How do you know my name?
What are you doing here?
She's a thief!
Oh, you're here too.
She ran away after stealing all
my... Oh, be quiet, you miserable hag. Whatever else this pious entity might be, I'd wager your miserable life. She's not a thief, unlike you, Meg Murdochson. What have you to do with her?
She kidnapped me.
I did nae such thing.
She was going to kill me.
Well, you listen to the lass.
I will, Meg, not least because I am now the magistrate of this county.
What? Well... If you have me up before you, I'll be telling everyone what you have been and what you did in Scotland.
Do you think anybody around here would believe your word against the man they rent their cottages and land from? Sam, take these two off to the village lockup, will you?
There's no fairness in this world when all the justice is owned by criminals.
Oh, stuff something in her mouth, for God's sake. Now, Jenny... Shall we go somewhere a little more private, where we can exchange explanations?
Now I've told you why I find myself here.
It's only fair that I tell you why I am, of course. But first, take some wine, Jenny.
No, thank you, sir.
Why does that not surprise me? Well, I'm here for exactly the same reason as you are, Jenny.
To ask for Effie's pardon of the king?
Not exactly.
Well, then what?
To barter my life for hers.
I don't understand.
When you wouldn't lie to save your sister's life, even when I was threatening your own, I knew there was only one chance left, which was to take myself to London and make it known that the man who incited the notorious Edinburgh riot would give himself up in return for Effie's pardon. Unfortunately, I was so eager to get there, I fell off my horse close by, broke my leg, and knocked myself out for the best part of a week, during which time my father died, I inherited the estate, and became the local representative of justice, all of which, I think you will agree, takes coincidence and irony to the point of tragedy and tests credibility to the limit. And then you turn up, and now it's not so much tragedy as farce.
Why would you die to save my sister?
Because I love her.
The way you loved Madge?
I never loved Madge.
But you made both of them abandon their babies.
I said I loved her. I didn't say I wanted to be a daddy.
And is Effie's baby dead, like Madge's?
Well, Meg claimed not.
Meg?
But if you like, we can ask her again using stronger methods of persuasion.
You gave Effie's child to her.
Well, Effie was sick with guilt and terrified of what her canting father would do when he found out, so I paid Meg to get rid of the problem. Unfortunately, the hag was not entirely sober at the time, so she no longer remembers who she gave the baby to. Where are you going?
To London.
Now?
Yes.
Rest here overnight.
No.
Well, take some food at least.
No, thank you.
Why?
It would stick in my throat.
Wait, Jenny, please.
What?
If by some miracle you get to the king and he refuses the pardon, which he most certainly will, you know where I am. My name is George Staunton. You can barter my life in exchange for Effie's.
I won't be responsible for taking your life, sir. Even to save my sister's.
My lord, you're so good, you're bad. Why not? Am I not wicked enough? What have I to do to deserve death in your eyes?
I rely on God, not men.
Well, good luck with that. I'll send my servant after with some money for the coach, for I'm certain Meg Murdochson will have relieved you of whatever you had.
I didn't want your money. How many times, man? I didn't want your master's money.
The maester says I asked to give it to you. Whether he wants it or not.
Please go away.
Oh, he's not so bad. You know his master's go.
He's a criminal and a murderer.
I well, that's as may be, but he pays better than most and regular. And he doesn't throw lasses out of work just because they've gotten themselves in trouble, which is more than you can say for the rest of the maesters round here.
He hasn't even got the excuse of poverty or lack of education.
Aye, well, they say he had a depraved childhood.
He plays at wickedness for sheer pleasure.
He was brought up in the West Indies on a plantation where they say wickedness is normal. Floggings, cruelty, all manner of lasciviousness. His mother indulged him, his father neglected him. And when the old sinner found God, took to the cloth and brought little George back home. Oh, he was too busy saving souls to save his son, who for all that has a good heart and
look,
everything.
If I take your siller, will you stop talking and go away?
And he'll use it, as my maester wants, to take a coach and rent a room in a decent inn.
Yes.
Done.
So our doughty little heroine gets to London quicker than anyone could have expected. And as luck or shameless plotting would have it, the servant takes one look at her and says,
"Not today, thank you, darling."
The Duke of Argyll happens to be on his way out.
"But I've walked most of the way for Edinburgh."
"Yeah, this morning I walked most of the way from Cheapside."
Sees Jenny's desperation.
"To save my sister's life."
Notices the letter she is waving.
"And have an introduction from a man whose father saved the life of his father."
With the result that Jenny, against all expectations, swiftly gains her audience with the Scot closest to the King in the whole of the London Parliament, and allows herself to think that there is now maybe a chance of at least getting to see the King. Unfortunately...
"I'm impressed by the journey you made, and my family owe a debt to the family of your friend who wrote this letter, but I'm afraid I can't help you, lassie."
"But why, my lord?"
"Because after the riot and barbarous hanging of Captain Porteous, the King and his ministry wanted to punish Edinburgh itself by removing its charter and liberties, and it was all I could do to stop that going through Parliament. But I did, and as a result, I'm badly out of favour."
"But..."
"No buts, Jenny Dean. That's the top and bottom of it."
"So my sister will die, even though she did not kill her child, and nobody even knows if it was killed or no."
"I own the statute is severe and even unjust."
"But you didn't care about injustice."
"I care very much, young lady, but justice costs, and all my influence is now spent."
"I'm not asking you to do anything,
but only make it possible for the king to do something.
The king has refused all pardons to Scots since the Porteous riot.
Can you not go to the queen?
This is not a fairy tale, you impertinent girl.
But unless kings and queens are different to common folk, it's the wife that has the final say.
The queen was as angry with me as the king, so it's hopeless. Show Miss Dean out, will you?
Come along, miss.
There's always hope, sir. There has to be. For without it, we're all condemned to die in rotten darkness.
Wait.
Sir?
You're a most persistent and impertinent young woman.
You called me back to tell me that.
But sometimes you have to be. Listen, it's pushing a rock up a mountain, but the Queen's not as stupid. Well, let's say she's a wee bit brighter than the King, and she knows that I am the acceptable face of Scotland down here and support the Union, so she won't want me out of favour for too long. And this business of the pardon is perhaps trivial enough
it's life
for her
and death.
To use as a lever to get me back in favour.
So you'll try and get me an audience with the King?
No.
But my lord...
I'll try to get you an audience with the Queen instead, but I can't guarantee it. Understand?
And so Jenny waits. And waits. And waits in a room at the inn paid for by Effie's wicked lover, while the day for her sister's execution edges nearer and nearer until there are but a few left. And she fears the Duke of Argyll has failed in his mission, when there he is, dressed like the prince in the French tale of Cinderella that Reuben read to her when they were bairns.
The Queen will see you.
Oh, thank the Lord.
Thank me first.
Oh, well, sir. I will in my prayers.
But do it later. For now, put on your plaid and your bonnet and follow me.
But I can't see a queen dressed in such rags.
Yes, you can. Because the court is full of overdressed harlots. So a plaid-clad peasant girl may make a pleasant change. Now get a move on if you hope to save your sister's life.
So they go in the Duke's carriage to a grand palace, through its great gates, and then on foot down a long tunnel of grass and trees, at the end of which stand two great ladies in fine flowing gowns and great white wigs piled high on their heads.
And how are my husband's fractious Caledonian subjects, my Lord Argyle?
The less fractious for the King's wise decision not to punish his many good ones for the sins of the few.
And what do you want with me, since you clearly have both the Scottish and the English parliaments in your capacious pocket?
And so the Duke explains Effie's case, which doesn't seem to touch her, and she is tapping her toes and twitching her fan and sighing, when he mentions the long and dangerous journey Jenny had made from Edinburgh.
On foot, you say?
All but the last stage, ma'am.
Let me see this paragon.
Step forward, Jenny Dean.
Your Highness.
She's unprepossessing enough. Tell me, child, what sort of country is it where child murder is so common that it requires such a severe law?
If your Highness please, there's places besides Scotland where mothers are unkind to their own flesh and blood.
At which the Queen frowns, and the Duke leans in close to her and whispers,
For God's sake, lassie, do you not ken that the Queen is blamed for the bad relations between the King and the Prince of Wales?
And then Jenny is certain she has ruined everything. Except the younger, more beautiful, but so far silent lady standing just behind the Queen is smiling. And, as the Queen starts to flounce away, she gently restrains her.
Caroline, do you not think that a gesture of mercy from the King might go some way to reducing the risk of a much bigger rising in that beastly country?
And then Jenny takes her chance and speaks from her heart, not knowing what words will come out of her mouth until they are spoken.
Ma'am, a word of the King's might restore a daughter to a broken old man and preserve a foolish young life that may yet be saved from damnation. And when death comes, as it must, to high and low the same, then it isn't what we had done for ourselves, but what we had done for others that will tell with the one true King above.
And then there is a silence as before a storm. And Jenny fears she has talked her poor sinful sister's neck into a noose, for Argyle is gripping her elbow as if to say, Be quiet now, for you have said too much. And then the Queen's frown slowly turns into a smile, like a crack in thin ice.
Such eloquence from one so low. We shall have to look over our shoulders before long if peasants outtalk queens. That said, I cannot grant a pardon to your sister, Miss Dean.
Oh, I am sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry I spoke out of turn, but...
But you shall not want my warm intercession with His Majesty. Now, if you will excuse me, I hope to see your grace more frequently again at the palace.
Yes, ma'am. You shall. You surely shall.
Crack on, coachman, and bravo, Jenny Dean, bravo!
But there's no certainty the king will grant a pardon, is there, sir?
With his wife and his mistress rubbing away at your cause in bed, I think we can safely say that a pardon will come.
Then Effie's saved.
If we get the document up to Edinburgh in time, yes.
But there's only days to the execution, and it took near on 2 weeks for me to walk down here.
We can but try. In my own coaches, with me by your side, to make sure you're not detained or delayed.
And so the king grants Effie's pardon, and my lord Argyle and Jenny set out with it for Edinburgh. But her adventures aren't over yet. Oh no. For as the second day of her journey north fades into a deep crimson sunset, her carriage passes once again through the village where she had left Meg Murdochson and Madge Wildfire in the hands of her sister seducer.
What's going on there, my lord?
I don't know, my dear. Some sort of village festival.
But what's that they're dancing around?
Looks a little like a gallows, but I don't expect it to...
Oh, dear lord. That thing dangling from it.
Crack on, coachman.
No. No, stop him. I want to see. Please, my lord. Stop, coachman.
Whoa!
Doesn't concern us, Jenny.
If that poor creature is who I think she is, it concerns me greatly.
Jenny, Jenny, come back. For heaven's sake.
Let me through, please. Excuse me. What's going on?
We're hanging a murderess.
She should have been hung for a witch, but they don't let us do that anymore.
Oh, Lord. Let that not be Madge.
She tried to cut her mother down from the gallows, so now they're giving her what she deserves.
No. Let me through. Let me pass, for the love of God. Stop it. Leave her alone. She hasn't done anything wrong.
That's enough, Jenny Dean.
Leave me be. Please, Mr. Staunton, they're killing her.
If you try to stop them now, they'll turn on you. Believe me, I know about mobs.
You want this to happen. You're the law here. You condemned her mother.
For kidnapping you?
You did it because she knew you led the riot in Edinburgh.
Did I?
And now, if they kill Madge as well, nobody else knows except me.
Is that so?
So will you turn your mob on me now?
Well, if that were true, I would.
With my friend the Duke of Argyle sitting over there in the coach.
Probably not, then.
So stop them from doing this to Madge. Please.
And what do I get in return?
I'll keep your secret. Only stop them. Please. It's horrible. Madge. Madge, can you hear me? Is my sister's baby still alive? Where is Effie's bairn, Madge? Please, Madge.
You're wasting your time.
Madge, I'm sorry.
What are you apologising to her for?
For the way of the world. For everyone.
The owl from the steeple sang, welcome, poor lady.
I'm so sorry, Madge. I'm so, so sorry.
She's dead. Save your breath. You'll keep your promise to me.
Yes.
Why should you?
It was a promise.
And you never lie, of course.
and so Effie's life is saved. Her strict Presbyterian father takes her back in despite everything. Reuben Butler marries Jenny, is given a good living in one of the Duke of Argyll's island kirks, and they all live happily ever after. Especially Effie, it seems.
Effie.
Oh, dear Lord, it's you. But I thought...
Will you marry me, Effie?
She soon elopes with Staunton, and when he inherits yet more wealth and a great title from a distant relative, she becomes a great lady.
Ladies and gentlemen, all rise for Lord and Lady Staunton.
But the more Effie's fame as a society hostess grows, and the further up the political ladder her husband climbs, the less secure they feel, for they know that their reputation, and therefore their wealth and power, hangs on a single thread. Little Jenny Dean's promise to keep a lie. A promise that she keeps till her dying day.
In The Heart of Midlothian, Jenny Dean was played by Joanne Cummins, Reuben Butler by Brian Ferguson, George Staunton and the Defending Council, Mark Bonner, Meg Murdochson and Queen Caroline, Caroline Guthrie, Madge Wildfire, Lindsay Ann Moffat, Dumby Dykes, Christian Rodsker, the Magistrate, Hugh Ross, the Duke of Argyll, Forbes Masson, and Effie Dean and the King's Mistress by Alice Simone, with David Tennant as Sir Walter Scott. The Heart of Midlothian was adapted for radio by Mike Harris. The music was composed and played by Ross Hughes and Esben Chalver, with Dominic Rye on the bagpipes. The play was produced and directed by Clive Brill, and is a Brill production for BBC Radio 4.